Blog Talk Radio.
Talking about, I'm the fucking host, bitch.
And hello, everyone. Hello, I'm Kay Thompson. This is Kay Thompson Live. And we have some new music that we're trying out, and it really is great. It's from Cuba. I forget the name of it. It's Afro-Cuban. And we're going to be trying out different musics as we go into new programming, you know, coming into the new year. So Kay Thompson Live, and I'm going to be joined by and with Wayne Gilman. He'll be calling in. Eric Payne will be calling in. Probably Gina Payne will be calling in.
Hello.
We're going to be doing a lot on political stuff. We're also, do you know that we always do news, information, education, and global issues? A lot of issues going on, a lot of things happening, a lot of hot news items, especially those in politics and about politics. The Center for Disease Control, you know, they're very active, and we're going to be probably speaking to someone who is works for this thing, and that probably will be in Renee Henningberg. We're going to be talking to her.
Hello, sometime. Hello.
Yes, hello. We're on the air.
Okay, didn't know you could hear me. This is Eric Payne. All right, you guys started a little bit without me there. Okay.
Yes, we did, Eric. Now, how are you?
All right, how are you, formal lady?
Formal.
You're so formal. You said, yes, we did, Eric. So did you. But today is, we are on the same day, right? Today is the 1st of October, 2014.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And a lot of stuff to talk about in the news. But I didn't mean to interrupt your intro, so.
No, that's okay, because, you know, since we are in two different places, you know, this is a little difficult hearing. But you know one thing? I didn't really know about the Rosa Parks being honored about a statue unveiling today in Newark, New Jersey. Was that today or yesterday?
That's correct. It was today.
Wow. I wish I had known, because I certainly would have gotten down to that unveiling, especially since, you know, I was one of the few people who was on, who was honored, really, to get it one-to-one interview with Rosa Parks years ago when she was in New Jersey. So, and we have the videotape of that. I've been saying that I was going to put that on the air, and we're going to be doing that soon. I haven't really decided when, but we are going to be showing that. And it's me talking to her for, I think it's 20 or 25 minutes. So that was at the county courthouse downtown Newark. Am I correct? Yes? Oh, okay. And then also, I want to talk about downtown Newark again. You know, Lisa's right here. She's giving me a lot of information. You know, Jazz Downtown Newark is absolutely fantastic. A lot of things going on. There's two brand new jazz clubs down there. One of them is Duke's on Clinton Street in Newark, and there's another one down in Newark, and I forget what street that's on. But Duke's and Clinton Street, Newark, that's owned and operated by Vonda McPherson. Vonda's was it a breakfast club, or what? We're getting all this information being fed to us. But anyway, we are going to be giving a lot of information about all these different things, because Newark seems to me that Newark is the place to be with all the new things going on. We talked about it before, and we will be continuing to talk about it. You know, there's some things that really is very annoying, and I'm expecting Wayne Gilman to call in very shortly also. We are looking at Obama being blamed for, you know, the CIA making a big mistake. That's happened when I was watching Chris Cuomo on CNN, who blasted the person for doing it, and that person was Newt Gingrich. What he was trying to do was blast President Obama for lacking in the safety of his own White House. This is absolutely ridiculous. So I can't stop laughing about this. But Cuomo really put him in his place. What he said was, don't make this about Obama. You know, presidential protection is at risk.
He's a bitch.
So why?
Lisa, listen, Lisa. We heard you yell at calling someone bitch. What the hell?
Hang up. So I don't know where that right now, but we're hearing the word, you know, yeah, okay. So anyway, where was I? About Newt Gingrich in Newark. So Anyway, normal protocol was not followed by the CIA and the Secret Service. Let's face it. It's absolutely ridiculous to have these people running around in the White House and carrying guns and whatnot. What happened to the CIA? What happened to the Secret Service people? You know, so we really have to get on that, and I hope people are going to really investigate that. Another thing that has happened is Obama disease has hit the United States, and that involved a person who did have or had been treated for Ebola, and he was diagnosed with Ebola in the United States, and he was on a flight, I think it was coming, I think it landed in Texas, and he had traveled to Liberia or was coming back from Liberia. So, and of course, what's been happening since then is that a lot of people involved with this person who was coming back from or on the flight from Liberia, you know, a lot of people around him, the ambulance crew and others, have been, you know, scrutinized and examined, and just in case, because they say that just in case that is contagious, which it is, but it doesn't spread as easily as a flu or cold, they say. So, but you want to listen to, you know, more information about it. I'm not too sure about all the medical information. Dr. Sanjay Gupta, you know, on CNN was giving quite a detailed information about Ebola. But I'm quite sure, you know, with the advancement in medical, you know, things that we have going on here in the United States, you know, yes, it is a problem, yes. Is it something that we do not take lightly? Of course not. You know, so, you know, we will be advising you on things as we go along. But the protection, I want to get back to the White House, the protection with the Secret Service people, the CIA, I mean, the people who are protecting the supposed to be protecting the president and his family. And it was really quite a story. Wonder who is behind this? What happened? The Secret Service director, you know, seemed to know absolutely nothing. The female, so I'm quite sure, you know, she's going to be history very shortly. So we'll see what's going to be happening. Also, you know, there was a Congressman Lynch, you know, who really was interesting in what he said. He said to the rest of his congressional members, protect the president like you protect your life reputation. I guess that gets them right in the gut. So let's see what we have. Now, also, we're going to be talking to Deb Smith, who is the head of the NAACP, the Newark branch of the NAACP. So we're going to be talking to her this evening, about education. We're on the air. Yes. Hello, Eric.
Hey, sorry about that to our listening audience. I was having a little problem with my phone here at my house, and I was expressing a little frustration. You guys might have heard me use a little foul language. Sorry to all the listening audience. I've had little technical difficulties here, which I try to figure out. We all know how that gets sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just chiming back into the conversation because I have not quite, as I said, having difficulties listening.
What we were talking about, Eric, was the problem with the CIA and the Secret Service and not protecting, the, you know, President Obama. And then
right.
With Newt Gingrich being on with Chris Cuomo this morning, Chris really lit into Newt Gingrich because he was trying to blame the president for lacking, you know, in protection of the White House. He was going in that direction, so Chris Cuomo really lit into him.
Well, everybody knows Newt Gingrich is not right in his head. So who's surprised? I mean, we're talking about a guy who had the contract for America. We'd like to call it a contract on America. And the very revolution that elected him in to be his speakership, eventually they got rid of him. So, and we know that Newt Gingrich only ran for president so he could stock up and make more money. You know, he got in trouble with the Tiffany's account when he ran up a big jewelry account that was, I think, was a part of his campaign fund. So he really is no one to be talking about anything, and I don't know why they keep giving him a platform.
I'm taking him seriously because apparently he's not really serious. He's he thinks he's highly more intelligent than everybody else, really.
He's one of those individuals that is what they call, excuse my chewing, I'm trying to eat my dinner, as rude as that might be, but Newt Gingrich is one of those people they call a bomb thrower who says incendiary stuff and then kind of gets a reaction out of people, and that's only because like a Rush Limbaugh, like a Sarah Palin, the more outlandish stuff they say, the more attention it gets from the rabid right, their constituent and their listeners.
You know, I don't know why they do this, because the fact that they look like fools, you know, and for them to have a certain appeal to a certain audience is incredible to me.
Mm-hmm.
These two people, you know, some of the stuff that they say doesn't even make sense.
Right, right. Well, I don't think they're just looking like fools. I think they are fools.
Yeah.
it's unbelievable that we have a president of the United States that has to be experiencing all that the President Obama is experiencing. Certainly,
yeah.
The Secret Service really needs to step up their game. I'm going to call on all folks that listen to our show. When you're out there and you tell somebody that if you happen to be in an event and you see the president, just get his back a little bit. Just look around that audience. Make sure nobody's in there that place to do any ill will. If they if they look funny, keep an eye on that person, because clearly it's contingent upon us, his constituents, his followers, his supporters, his people, to look out for him as well. So I say anybody that's around an event that you happen to be fortunate enough to be where the president is, just get his back a little bit and look out for the brother. I'm sure he's kind of used to gunfire living in Chicago, so I know that that's probably not too scary for him, but we need to definitely be concerned. And I was encouraged by the bipartisan anger from Republicans and Democrats alike at the ex-head of the Secret Service and their lack of ability to protect the President of the United States. That's the one thing that kind of made you pretty proud, that you have people as far right as Daryl Issa and Jason Chaffetz, and then you have Democrats also all coming together to say, this is ridiculous. We have to at least make sure the President of the United States is safe. And
absolutely,
the Secret Service needs to step up their game to make sure things like that, idiotic things like that, don't happen.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And you sort of wonder, you know, what they're thinking is when they have somebody running across the lawn and somebody else actually getting into the White House and
right.
getting to or at the head of or the beginning of the East Wing. Now, I've
right.
been on a tour of the White House years ago, but I really don't remember, you know, the whole layout of it. I
mm-hmm.
remember that it was impressive. You know, house building. I mean, to think that you were in the residence of the President of the United States, the most powerful country in the world, you know, was really kind of, you know, makes you sort of be taken back a little bit. So
exactly. I mean, we're going to have, I believe we might be having Congressman Payne call in tonight.
And
he could give us his assessment of something like that. We have another caller, I see.
Okay. We're going to be talking to also Deb Smith. Deborah is the new head of the Newark branch, NAACP, and they met last night, and I'm going to be talking to her about the educational programs for the AXO organization that deals with, you know, young people.
Okay, well, let's see who this caller is. Maybe this is your call, our caller, Deborah Smith.
Okay.
Go on, caller. You're on the line.
Good evening. This is Deborah Smith Gregory.
All right.
President of the Newark branch NAACP. How are you this evening?
Hello,
we're good. Good, Deb. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well.
Good.
Just calling in to talk about an issue that is very important to everyone, no matter where they are, particularly in the United States, and specifically here in Newark. We are in the process of having a radical dismantling of public education.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that comes the increased privatization and disruptive reform in the name of school reform. This is something that's happening. Well, it's happening here in Newark, but it is also happening throughout the state of New Jersey, as well as urban centers across the country. New Orleans is an example of that. Philadelphia is an example of that, although people in Philadelphia have been resisting and pushing back. And that's not to say that public education is the be-all and the catch-all, and there is nothing better, and that it doesn't need improvement. It does. But the democracy that we live in says that we should have access to education as the stepping stone to a better quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And what is
by
Deb? What is the stance of the NAACP regarding this?
The stance of the NAACP is that nationally we are against vouchers. So there are no vouchers per se being used in northern New Jersey. They're trying to do that in an experimental way in southern Jersey. But in terms of the voucher system, the national is against it. On the local level, there's a pitting of charter schools against traditional public schools.
Okay.
And parents are being pitted against one another. Children are being pitted against one another. And that divide and conquer is not only radically dismantling public education, but it's also creating a split inside our community. So
all right,
it's an enormous fight.
Deb, I want you the voucher system is. Can you explain what the voucher system is?
Well, the voucher system is that, let's say I'm a parent, and I want my child to go to a more affluent community to attend that school. In New Jersey, there is that system, and I think it's something that's being pushed nationally, where I, as the parent, would get a voucher to be able to go to that neighborhood if the neighborhood is in agreement of taking students. And that means that my money, my X amount of $1,000 that my child would use to be educated would also go.
So is this an issue that the NAACP is involved in, is taking up?
Well, we on the national level, there was a resolution opposing the voucher system. Because it is clearly not a fair and equitable system.
Mm-hmm.
But then
okay,
at the same time,
yeah, I want to know also. Now I know that the NAACP has quite a program and involve a number of programs involving youth. Explain what the AXO program is. When I was on WLIB years ago, the AXO program, there was a big conference where kids came from, I don't know, out of state, out of New York, and in different places, and they actually had this huge program at one of the hotels, and that was my first involvement with AXO. But explain what that is for young people.
AXO is an answer to mobilize the adult community to mentor young people. It is an enrichment mentoring program. The AXO stands for Afro Academic Cultural Technological and Scientific Olympics, and we use this competition to mentor young people in a holistic way, but also in a particular category. There are 28 categories under the headings of humanities, science, performing arts, visual arts, and business. And just within the last 2 years, culinary arts has been introduced as well. And the mentoring program goes on throughout the year. For New Jersey, we just celebrated our 25th anniversary, and we operate independent programs, but we come together to host the competition as well as the award ceremony. So we had a gala award ceremony in southern New Jersey. We had our 25th competition in northern New Jersey. And then we took about 30 kids to Las Vegas, where the AXO competition is a prelude to the national NAACP convention. So we took
about
30
AXO,
kids there.
you're saying these events that you take the kids to, but how do they get into AXA? Do they have, if they have a specific talent, they can enter into a contest or into an event or something? The way that works?
Well, yes and no. It is not a talent competition. It is a mentoring program. So let's say they don't have, they have a talent. We had a young man who had a talent in dancing, but we mentored him in writing because he was getting the dancing part at the school of Newark School of the Community Arts. So the idea is to infuse some self-confidence, some self-worth, to allow young people to experiment being just testing their brilliance in a safe environment where everyone is on that same page with adults who are nurturing them and encouraging them to be the best that they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went to Vegas in July, this July 2014, we had 30 students, and we actually, for our 25th anniversary, we did very well. We had 9 students who came home with national medals, and that was great.
This is Eric, Deborah. And kind of to veer back to the school system and the voucher system, the AXO program sounds, and the mentoring aspect of the AXO program is something that sounds like maybe we're going to need that, the strength of that program, to fill some of the holes that are being created by this school voucher system, if I'm not mistaken. I'm kind of seeing that there's a possibility there that it can help out. And I'm trying to get back to the voucher. I mean, the AXO program is great, but to me, the voucher, this charter school versus public school system or attack is something that's really damaging our school systems and the educations.
And see, now it's not, the charter schools are considered public entities. The difference is they are their own districts unto themselves. So I have a school. I am my own district. I say what goes into the curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. I am not held by the same standards that a public school is held. So let's say with special needs children, many charter schools don't embrace special needs children. And some of the charter schools, unfortunately, don't embrace the young black man. They don't. They give them a harder time. They'll deal with the girls, but they won't have that same nurturing process. It's a picky thing. So what happens is that they don't, the kid doesn't drop out. The parent is held and so highly accountable for every single solitary move that they wind up taking their child out. Because, I've heard statements like it feels like harassment, as it relates to the boys. And we have boys here in Newark that we know who have attended some of the charter schools, and they are not doing well emotionally. They're not doing well. And then the other part of that is, I'm not knocking charter schools, but parents are being forced to parent in a charter school. They're forced to sit with their child and read things that they should be doing anyway. They're being forced to do. And that's, that can be a good thing.
Right, I was going to say that it would be a good thing in my estimation. I mean, my mother, as you know, was a teacher, and she's always very active in all of our educations, as was my father and my uncle, Congressman. The late Congressman was a teacher as well. My sister Jean is very active in her children's education, as is my sister Christy. The aspect that strikes me in your description is that in a city that is predominantly African American, how you could have a bias against young black boys. It seems to be almost, you know, how I'm surprised at how they're able to get away with this in a city that, you know, is predominantly black. You're going to have young black men in the school system. So that is something that is particularly alarming to me to hear that.
It's alarming in that.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say this. It's alarming in that in Newark, in particular, a lot of the teachers that are coming in are white, and a lot of the teachers, the African American teachers who have been around, are either being forced out, are being this, you know, it's like, okay, we give you too much money, so we can get two for the price of one. And in a lot of instances, it's about the economy, because you have kids coming out of college owing a whole lot of money. Teach for America says that if you teach in an urban center a couple of years, you can get your master's for free. In Newark, we have a place called the Teachers Village, which is housing specifically for teachers. And how they're pushing it is that, okay, the rent is high. However, if a couple of teachers room together, you know, become roommates, then you can afford it, and you're only going to be there. This is a short stint. This is not a career. Your family was a career family, has been a career family as it relates to education. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Jump in here, Maya. I mean, that's right.
I have a problem with this, Deb. Okay, now, we know a little bit about that. As a matter of fact, we have been talking to a mediator with the school system, who is also another friend of mine, Ann Alexander, who is an expert in mediating, you know, different educational things, and she probably knows, you know, knows more about, you know, the core curriculum and the different, you know, different programs involving the Newark school system. So she's on, a periodically. But what I want to know is, what the heck is the NAACP doing about it? You have the Act So program. You know, and the history of the NAACP means that they do something about these issues. So are you guys involved with, are you, living up to what the NAACP standard sounds like? Now, that sounds like harsh criticism, but, you know, with the historical presentation the other night at the Historical Society, I really want to know what the NAACP is doing, since they were so active years ago, you know, during the early civil rights period.
Well, I can only speak for Newark right now, and we have been extremely active in the opposition of the superintendent's policies, the racism of the policies, and it's been a true uphill battle, because we are in a state where it's okay to be a bully. The head of our state, that's how the head of our state
Deborah,
rules,
you created a preach
as a
now.
Bully.
Yeah.
As a bully.
You know what I'm saying?
So,
Deb?
There's a trickle down, and then what they say is that, well, there's only a few people that are, you know, jumping up and down and what have you, and public process does not matter. We don't care what those people say. He has said that. We don't care what the people say. I don't care what the people of Newark think. Public process does not matter. And so the NAACP, short of right now, we are in the process. I, as a citizen, I made a formal complaint. The NAACP, we're looking at what legal recourse do we have, because that's been the effectiveness of the NAACP.
That's
but
good
it
to
takes
hear.
A long time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time. That's a very slow process. The Abbott versus Burke that said that there was an unequal funding process and that the children in the cities were should be given more, that took 20-something years.
Well, we have a caller on the line.
That come through.
Hello, we have a caller on the line that we can get into this conversation about charter schools if he wants. Caller, I think it's Congressman Payne. Get in. Would you like to get in on this conversation? I know you've been we've had a conversation with you before about charter schools, but we're on with Deborah Gregory and Deborah Smith Gregory, if I'm not correct, of the NAACP,
mm-hmm.
Newark chapter.
Absolutely.
President. And,
Madam President, how are you tonight?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
How are you, Congressman?
Oh, I'm doing well. And yourself?
As an afterthought, I'm doing fine.
Good, good.
Okay. So what do you want to chime in on this discussion of the charter schools versus the public schools and also the way that the current administration, Governor Christie administration, is really not seem to be too concerned about what a lot of the residents feel, the ones that might have a different opinion about his stance on charter schools. What's your assessment?
Well, I think, we have been involved with this discussion over the course of the last decade, and many of us who have a great interest and a respect for the public school system in this country, have been very concerned about this movement towards charters. It is something that potentially could have been a good thing, but really has not worked out in the best interest for people in our community. And,
exactly.
This top-down authoritarian notion that we get from Trenton does not help at all. There, I don't know of any school system where the parents of the students are just blatantly disregarded. I mean, it is an abomination, to be honest, how the parents in the Newark Public Schools are treated. And I know Ms. Gregory, a longtime educator in the Newark Public School System, and now the president of the NAACP, can speak much more eloquently and detailed to the whole surrounding of the situation that we find ourselves in. She is a product of the Newark Public Schools and had gone on to be a great educator in the community, also journalist. And so, I'd rather just hear from her. But I went to the floor of Congress last week, and although it's not a federal issue, I am a parent in Newark. I am a resident of Newark. So I took the bully pulpit opportunity I have at the floor of Congress, which allows me to speak on any topic that I would like for 1 minute. Unfortunately, it was only 1 minute, but I think I used that 1 minute well and got my point across that we are not happy with the One Newark plan. The start of school has been a debacle this year. To see Dayton Street School closed and children have to cross that park and go to school, and it sounds like they're going to close Miller Street next.
They already did.
The number of schools, it's already closed.
Yep.
So it's we're in a crisis here, and I felt that it was incumbent upon me in my position to speak up. I've done it locally, but I finally felt I had to take it nationally to possibly get some attention to it, because the superintendent, I sent her two letters 5 months ago, and she did not have the decency or the respect to respond to that either. So I took it to the floor of Congress and aired out my concerns about what is going on with the miseducation of our children in the city of Newark.
It seems.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right, and that suggestion is You know, you have a strong organization, the NAACP. Deb Smith-Gregory, friend of mine, is head of this Newark branch, put out a call for people to join the NAACP so they will be very active again under Deb. That's what is needed, is more membership, more people joining the NAACP, which then they can do a better job in organizing and in really speaking out with force. Now, I know that there was that, you know, the event at the Historical Society the other night, and I would like to really see the NAACP, you know, really alive and well and moving. There was a time when the NAACP, you know, they were in the forefront of the whole movement. So let's do this. Let's put more money in the organization and have them, if we have to go and march in the streets, let's do it.
Right, right. Well, and that, also,
well,
just
we certainly have been, we have been, I have been marching in the streets as the president and more press conferences from Trenton on down. I'm ready to come down there with Congressman Payne to meet with the Secretary of Education, because he came to Newark and told the superintendent that she was trying to do too much too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she did not respond to the congressman. She did not respond to the Secretary of Education. She
right.
has been given carte blanche to just do this dismantling. When she attempted to do it in New York, she was dismissed. And if there's anyone that's listening that really wants to get a handle about charter schools, they are educational management organizations. And there is a professor by the name of Gary Miron, M-I-R-O-N, who is in, I believe he's in Colorado. But if you Google him, you can find him. And he shows that these EMOs, some are for-profit, some are not-for-profit. But the not-for-profit, as many of as you know who are on this line, that you can make money in a non-profit situation. So it's about the money.
Right.
It's
absolutely
about the money.
Right. Let's
and
jump
it,
to Wayne.
And
we have Wayne Gilman, Congressman. I don't want to, if you
yeah.
respond, go right respond. I just want to let everybody know we have Wayne
yeah.
Gilman, our other co-host, on the line. And Wayne, just hold off. We want to get your assessment because you're calling in from New York. So we want to get the assessment from New York as well in terms of charter schools versus public schools. But, Congressman, were you going to make a point?
Yeah, I just, to Ms. Gregory's point, you know, a conversation I had with my father maybe 6 or 7 years ago, that was the exact point he pointed out to me, Deborah, that, you know, this was about money now.
Yep, yeah.
Corporations are looking for a new revenue stream, and they realize that there was a great potential in education with the amount of money that's spent on it. So they're all investing in education as a revenue stream. And that's
right.
what it's all about. It's about
because Wall Street has been raped, totally
mm-hmm.
raped, and the last bailout will probably be the last bailout because the American public is not going to suffer under underwater mortgages and foreclosures and what have you and not get bailed out, but
okay.
The people on Wall Street who create. Who have created financial crises does get bailed out and get bonuses.
Right, exactly.
It's about the money.
Exactly.
Not,
Wayne Gilman,
not,
are you there? You want to get
in
on this from the New York side?
Yeah, certainly. I want to say good evening and forgive my tardiness. I've been on mass transit, which is another issue all by itself most of this day. So that's
now,
why I'm a little late.
Mass transit.
But. Yeah, but I just want to say good evening to everyone and the congressman, and I have to agree with all that's going on that it's not something that's just germane to New Jersey. This is a nationwide problem. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on the fence, you know, because after having such a storied career in broadcasting, I had a chance to dabble a little bit with education from an inner-city perspective. And not to say that I'm anywhere near credentialed as anyone else on the panel, including your mother, Kay. But the thing is that what I see, particularly from the New York City perspective, particularly like in the hard urban areas, the South Bronx, particularly,
some of the public schools are waning compared to what the charter schools are doing. And again, it still comes down to a money issue. I'm not an advocate for charter schools. I don't see why public schools cannot do a better job in what goes on. But there seems to be a radical shift, and there's this perception that if you attend a charter school, that your son and daughter is going to do or excel a lot better than they would in the public school system. And I think everyone is really trying to save the system as it is, but we're in a curve right now. And again, it all is relative. You know, I mean, it's just it's unfortunate with what goes on. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, the parents themselves have to be more vigilant and active. You know, that sours me.
Absolutely,
more than anything else. I see parents who basically drop their kids off, and those who are involved in the teaching process have to play babysitter or anesthetize whatever problems that are going on at home and bring a level of calm and civility to the classroom for at least 8 or 9 hours during the course of somebody's day. And then once that day is over, you know, they're back into that crazy environment. You know, every time I hear this conversation, I'm reminded of one kid that basically got my act together. His name is Daquan. I won't give his last name. I was so challenged working for the first time in the system. This kid would glorify his father, who was a gangbanger, and doing time in murder. You know, we had computers in the classroom. He would get on the computer and bring up his father's profile and glorify that, and it just amazed me that he didn't have what many of us sitting around, you know, listening to this conversation would have in terms of a positive outlook. He felt that he had to be better than his dad from the perspective of outdoing what he did. And this is how the process continues. I'm not saying that this is relevant with every urban child, but, you know, he was a great challenge. And I quit a couple of years ago. I'm still in contact with one or two of the teachers, and, you know, it amazes me when I hear his growth now. It's like he's tried to mature, but it's still slow, you know. It's just unfortunate what goes on out here.
But well, that's why we also need adult education. NORC has one of the oldest adult ed schools. And there was a time when NORC actually had a college on top of a school, the fourth floor, and adults could go and get a degree in graphic design and what have you. There is a need for adult education. I don't mean just letting somebody get a GED, but adult ed. We all must be lifelong learners, and we can't stop just because, okay, you got your – because both the charter schools and the public schools are now – everything is about a test. And once you pass the test, that is an indication of your intelligence and your academic stamina. That is not an indication of being a whole person who can be self-sufficient and productive, because they're still not talking about what happens to the kids after they graduate from charter schools. These are all the same children. We can't afford the luxury of having this tale of two Newarks.
Right.
We can't. The city won't go where it needs to go or where it's in the process of going. It won't fully get there.
Deborah, we're ending this conversation
ma'am.
Now. You've been a great
Clearly
help, but I want to go.
You can tell I feel passionate about this.
Yes.
And we're going to support you all we can, and we will talk to you again. So thank you very much, Deborah Gregory, and we will talk again.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Now, Wayne and Eric, I want to go back to a really serious problem in the United States, the whole Ebola thing. What's going on with Congressman? What's going on with Congress, Congressman?
We might have lost the Congressman. I think his call might have been dropped. He's going to try to call back in.
Okay. Okay. What are your feelings about that, Eric? About Ebola?
I'm scared. No, I'm not to be ignorant, but I am concerned a little bit. I have
a number of feelings about it that, you know, when they first brought the American health aid workers back to this country, and all of a sudden they started getting the medicines and getting better, it made me wonder, well, why couldn't they have given those medicines to the people in Ghana, or is it, I forget exactly the area it is, Liberia, wherever they were. Why couldn't they start administering those medicines to the people that had Ebola over there? But then it appears to be that the follow-up and the care that the United States has and have in some of our medical institutions obviously far outweighs what they have in that developing region. That said, it is concerning that the disease is starting to spread, and now it's here in the United States. Perhaps our ability to have health care for people is something that will combat it from being as devastating as it has been. But time will tell, I would suppose. And
there's another thing I'm wondering about is that there were reports on, you know, several of the news, stations, you know, within the last couple of days about the person who I don't know whether he was a Liberian citizen or a, somebody who was visiting the United States or in the United States and still, or United States citizen. I'm just not sure. It would be interesting to know why the people in the hospital didn't give him a full enough examination and then send him home. All right? That's interesting to me.
From what I understand, I understood
or something or what? Why didn't the hospital keep him?
Well, if it's the victim that they determined in Texas, I understand that the test was not conclusive at the very beginning because sometimes it throws you off, you know, and that's been the case from a lot of the cases that have been exposed, not just in the States, but in Africa, until it gets to a point where it's almost full blown. Then they can determine as to whether or not what course of action they should take. But I think with this person in Texas, I didn't know, but I just read today that there's a part of Texas where there's a huge Liberian population, and this person was visiting Africa and came back with the disease, showed signs of some symptoms, but it wasn't conclusive that they had Ebola. But now that they've determined that, I guess they're going to put him on a strict regimen to get his health back together. But as you said, Eric, it is extremely scary. I mean, I've seen the ravages of that early on a few years ago, and I just said, oh, please, dear Jesus, let us find a cure for this. Because it was worse than what I saw with AIDS or anything else. You know, I've seen people die from AIDS, and, it can be a very painful death, but to see the disfigurement that goes on with Ebola is unfathomable. You know, I don't know. It's I can't think of anything that could be worse than that.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm wondering. You know, I'm one of those guys who doesn't completely trust situations that go on in our country, and I'm just wondering. What some people's agendas are in terms of certain things. Sometimes that's how populations are thinned out, you know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say in history for sure. I don't have the facts. I can't say factual. I can't say factual that they've said they've allowed disease to run rampant in different parts of America or the world. But we do know that smallpox was given to Native Americans years ago to thin them out. The Tuskegee experiment on African American men.
Yeah.
So it makes me wonder. It gives me food for thought about is this a way, somebody's way of thinning out the herd or thinning out a population? Some of the things that are in some people's minds and some of the plans and things that people have worked out, we have not been surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, I think, remain ever vigilant and always keep our eyes open from all sources.
Yeah, it's scary. I mean, I think about that, too. I don't want to think history can repeat itself that way. I want to think that we've all matured, because it's not just one element of society that, you know, this could be picked up by anybody. You know, that I often hear that from time to time, there's always that island off the island of Long Island. I think they call it Plum Island. I keep forgetting, where they have all the diseases known to modern man.
Yeah.
You know, I often say to myself, geez, I would hate to go out to the Hamptons one day and just find myself, you know, going across the channel there, being stuck and having to face that environment, because you would never think something so close to such a huge population in the tri-state area that we could be all susceptible to something that just, you know, innocently gets out, you know. Disease is funny. It's you know, and you're right, Eric. I mean, the history has been there. I want to think that we're beyond that, but, you know.
I mean, germ warfare has been used, right? I mean, they have
they have
developed terms for germ warfare, although they haven't unleashed it. But clearly we know that some of the technology got out, because that's how, what, Saddam Hussein or some of these people were gassing or using anthrax against some of their people. That's a germ. That's a biological agent, correct me if I'm not mistaken. But
Remember the bird flu?
That there are people that think things like that are okay.
Remember the bird flu from China?
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I hope we're not at that point, I swear.
Whether some things be seemingly intentional or not, or just not good attention to detail and bad work, I mean, it's still a frightening proposition to know that the disease potentially, and also that it's connected with Africans. I mean, that's another thing. You know, this is a disease that people equate with people of African descent from the African continent.
Yeah.
So that's another kind of image, kind of, you know, reason we should quarantine certain people, kind of, you know. So I just I am suspicious sometimes, and my eyebrow, which I'm pretty good at raising it like The Rock, rises up when certain things seem to line up. So
I agree. I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I even think about the vulnerability and the fragility of our government when it comes to protecting the president, you know, we have this controversy with the Secret Service now. I can't remember at any time when a sitting president has been so vulnerable. It just seems that when someone of color suddenly gets this in this position of power, you know, I don't want to think the worst, but, you know, sometimes I have to sit back and say to myself, you know, I never saw any issues of vulnerability, not to say that no one ever tried. I mean, of course, Reagan was shot. There have been a couple of instances with I think Bush won, you know, but not to the point where you just feel that, you know, at any time, this man's life could be laying in the balance because of somebody's negligence, and you kind of wonder politically if it's something that, you know, regardless of who you may be protecting, but, you know, it might be someone's personal ideology to say, hey, I want to be the first to have allowed this to happen, you know, that sort of thing.
Or, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ma.
With the negative statements of some of the politicians in Congress, of some of the Republicans, you know, that's not within the realm of impossibility, you know, because the rhetoric is so vicious and so hateful.
Exactly.
Remember Palin with the bullseye?
What with the bullseye?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Lisa's giving me... Oh, the bullseye she put on certain, something like that.
Are you talking about Sarah Palin putting a bullseye on? Well, that wasn't necessarily on Barack Obama, but the bullseye was used to certain targets for areas they needed to target during the campaign. But just she's right, and I think what Lisa's referring to primarily is the imagery that they used to put, like to say we need to win these areas, and
there
to put
go.
A bullseye on it as if it's a target to shoot. I mean, the imagery that they try to put out there, and lock and load, and the way
and all that.
All of this kind of war language. They're always about killing. They were war and guns and things. So I'm concerned too. I mean, well, what I was going to say to you, say to your point, Wayne, that you raised was that when do things stop looking like a coincidence?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guy gets over the roof, the other guy shoots, the other guy this. When do things stop looking like a coincidence to me?
Right.
I just look for things like that and other things that seem to be happening in the news. And excuse me, these guys are the best in the world at what they do. I just experienced with the Secret Service over the weekend at the annual legislative conference, otherwise known as the Black Caucus in Washington, D.C., where the president spoke. And, you know, they were on top of their job, you know. I mean, you don't want to indict the whole service because there's certainly some fantastic, heroic individuals that work for that organization, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to make sure that, you know, like you
what
said, the
man is... What about the war on drugs? All of a sudden, you had a whole lot of the majority of drugs in the black community.
Right, right.
Was that a coincidence?
Right. For all you talk about, for something happened from a coincidental standpoint. Yeah, that's... Something else made you have to ask, you know, this is a coincidence. So we have to be ever vigilant. Like I said, Wayne, earlier, I don't know if you can hear it, I said, you know, if anybody's out there that's listening to us that might be in presence of the president, might happen to see him, get fortunate to see him speak, just look out for the brother. Watch his back. Look around the area. Somebody look funny. Let him know you watching him. It ain't going to happen right now because we got this brother's back. You know, so that's my perspective. You know, I'm not going to let anything happen to him if I can help it. And if I'm in a vicinity where something looks funny, I'm sure going to keep my eyes open because that's where we are now. Clearly, I mean, for me, that's where we are. If we as citizens have to watch out for the president that we love, those of us that love him when he's there, then fine, so be it, you know. And I would think that any citizen that's a citizen of the United States and knows that we are a country of law and order should be concerned about that, as we saw today at the hearings. Maybe some were just doing lip service, but it was certainly a bipartisan amount of jumping on the former head of the Secret Service, because I understand the woman has been relieved of her job as Secret Service.
30 years in that capacity. And you know, sometimes you have to sit back and you wonder, you know, why now? Why is this all coming to light? You know, and even with a wholesale change, there's no guarantee that things are going to get better, you know.
Right.
But, you know, it's unfortunate that it happened under this lady's watch, and that's it.
Right. And the other incident with the gentleman shooting at the White House and hitting the windows or outside the resident, that was before her watch. And just some simple things that seem very simple to the average person, like to me, you go to the gate of the White House, people are walking by looking, and you mean to tell me there's not an armed guard at either end of the gate? Isn't that just something you would expect?
Exactly.
An armed guard at either end of the gate watching that gate because, you know, if somebody's going to try to do something crazy, they're going to try to jump over that gate. So you mean to tell me we don't have an armed guard that's standing out there? Come on. You got a security guard at the movie theater.
You
couldn't even go through Lafayette Park before getting to the White House without being stopped by somebody if they found something, you know, crazy going on, you know? I don't know what it's like now. I haven't been down to D.C. in a while, but that park used to be rat-infested, you know?
Right.
I mean, the deal is that they used to keep a watch on anything that was moving in the park. And and now, you know, it just seems to be fair game, you know? And you kind of wonder, well, why is there so... This lax mentality when it comes to guarding the White House. You couldn't get within the perimeter of the White House at one point.
Right.
You know, it's
so
crazy.
To cut you off, Wayne, but I just got heard that we're getting up on 90 seconds left in our show.
Oh,
time has flown. I'm sure you got that cue too, Ma. So why don't you take us out?
Okay. This is Kate Thompson. This is Kate Thompson Live. You can reach us on
blogtalkradio.com/KateThompsonLive. You can hear our shows live, or you can hear them archived for this fantastic discussion. Listen again next week to the Kate Thompson Live show. Go, Ma.
Miles Davis, everyone. A little bit of Miles.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, sounds good.
Do you right.
Thing to the Kate Thompson Live Show.
Yes. Darth Ann Kirk, New Jersey Performing Arts Center, everybody. Jazz is alive and well. Duke's Restaurant with Vonda McPherson. Reuben's Restaurant in East Orange. A lot of things going on. Support the NAACP. Okay? Make them a full life organization again.
And on November 4th, vote for Don Payne Jr. for Congress.
Right. Donald Payne, let him continue his job in Congress. Support him. And Miles?
And Kay, if I might, I just want to wish Al Sharpton, the good reverend, a happy birthday coming up on 60. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's... Good Lord. We're off. Wayne?
Yeah.
Okay, we're off the air.
Or maybe
are
not.
Yes, we are. 9 o'clock. Put the music in. Little Miles. A little bit of Miles Davis there, everyone.
I don't know.